Well, Chris Sivan here from Phoenix FM. I'm backstage at the Shacklewell Arms here in London Town, and I'm joined by a band who released one of my favourite records and EPs of 2013. And we're here at the album launch kind of gig for the new album, Wooden Aquarium. Hello, Mazes.
Hello. How you doing?
How you doing? Yeah.
I'm not bad. How are you, gents?
Yeah, good. I can't believe Ores and Minerals was only released last year. It seems like about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it's been like a massively busy period for you guys, because Ores and Minerals was February last year. Then September was Better Ghosts, September, October.
October and November.
And then now you've got the new album, Wooden Aquarium. So was it kind of a planned thing, or did it just kind of all just come together, all the kind of releases?
The thing that wasn't planned really was the EP. The label said, hey, do you want to do like a single or an EP or something? And we had a few songs. We'd started like writing for the third album, like Wooden Aquarium. And we had a few other songs, and we're like, well, let's just like record a bunch of stuff. And it kind of went from being a few songs to an EP to like more of a kind of mini album. But I mean, that wasn't planned at all. It just kind of, that kind of, we got carried away with that. And by the time it came to us recording, or you know, planning to record the third record, we're like, oh, we haven't got enough songs. Like, we need to, like, you know, kind of like a very quick writing process for the third album. So.
And the new album, Wooden Aquarium, that was recorded in the States, is that right?
Yeah.
That was recorded. So tell me like a little bit about the recording of the album.
Well, we'd had the opportunity since we signed to Fat Cat, which was in 2010, to record in America, because the guy, Adam, who's is in a band called Mice Parade, who runs Fat Cat in America, he has a studio which is about an hour north of New York City.
Okay.
Place called Cornwall. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, Cornwall.
Yeah. And it was an option like on the first record, but we didn't do it. And then we didn't do it on the second, and we just thought, hey, we should do that, we should take him up on that. And there was a guy who we wanted to work with, Johnny, who like produced the album, and like it kind of, you know, there was some synergy there that we had the opportunity to get this really cheap studio, but also to work with this guy who we were interested in working with.
So, and if I'm right in what a bit of reading that I've done, that the album was kind of recorded kind of like a live kind of setup with the three of you.
This is live as we've ever recorded before. I think the first record we did it very much like a studio production kind of way, like doing lots of parts separately rather than just playing it in a room all together. The second record we did in lots of different locations and bedrooms, and in the back room here at the Shacklewell Arms as well. We brought lots of the drums there. This is probably like the nearest to how the three of us play live. I think it's been put onto record.
Okay, so, and who, are you all involved in the kind of songwriting process for the songs, or do you kind of all write and then kind of come together and put the songs together, or how does it kind of work when you're working on songs?
This one's a bit more, there's exceptions to it, but I usually come up with like the kind of bare bones of the song, and then this one we like rehearsed and worked on all the arrangements and like everything together really. We rehearsed like quite thoroughly, you know, before we went and recorded. I kind of bring the you know, bare bones of the songs in, but it's very much with the way like Conan and Neil play in mind, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I think like on the first record, we were rehearsing today for this show, and we were playing like some of the like songs off the first record to like figure out whether there's anything we could or should do.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was interesting playing them because it feels completely unnatural for us to play like that. And I think it probably did around when we made the album. We weren't comfortable playing in that style. I was watching Neil like playing Summer Hits today, and he looked like he was going to die, or he's just like really struggling to play like that. He's very kind of straight. As soon as he does anything that's slightly swung, it doesn't work as much. So, and I can't. We all have like a style of playing that, yeah. I think we've got to the point where like, well, that's what we do really well, so we should write songs like that.
And that's more like with this album. Also, something that I was also reading, that to get to the studio was a bit of a trek. It was quite a snowbound place.
We kind of got snowed in on the first night when we got there. So yeah, we kind of drove up there and woke up in the morning, and there was like crazy 3 or 4 foot of snow, which is amazing. But at the same time, it kind of made working like literally every morning. You had to like get a shovel out because it was like up like a little hill through some trees, because it's basically totally in the middle of the woods to get to the studio. So we had to kind of like dig a path. So like the first path we dug in the first day was like 4 hours in the morning, just like before you'd even like have breakfast or anything, just trying to get to the studio. And then every day like it'd snow again, so you had to kind of clear it out a bit. And then trying to get cars out as well to go and get, like, once we'd run out of like food and beer after a couple of days, we had to like dig cars out of the snow to drive to the shop. So it was
we actually wasted a full day, well, nearly a full day recording, because the band that are just signed to Fat Cat called Honeyblood, they were doing their first few shows in America, and their tour manager like came to the house in the middle of the snow. It was like really thick, and they had to get the tour van out with all the gear, and we spent, I mean, it must have been like 6 or 7 hours like digging this van out. We were only there a week, and we spent like a good 6 or 7 hours of one day like digging this van out for Honeyblood. I don't know whether they know about it. I hope they appreciate it though.
And does that kind of setting kind of creep into the album, you know, when you're recording, being in that kind of setting?
Yeah, definitely. I think that was the whole point, that we wanted to go and do it somewhere where it would just be us, and we were, you know, we were quite isolated, and I think it definitely bled into it. There's like a, I don't know, there's a sort of starkness to it. I think the recordings that was very there, present, with when you looked outside, it was like bleak. I'm not saying it's like a bleak album, but it was very, we were very alone.
Yeah. On a remote place. Looking at last year, I think last year was a very busy year. You had the album, the EP, and I think I read something, you did something like 100 shows last year, or something around about.
Maybe.
A lot of.
I did a lot. I think it was definitely 1 year, maybe that year, or maybe it was the year before, I don't know.
You
lose track.
So, is that the kind of plan now? You've got the album out, and just going to kind of get out and just do like a whole bunch of shows?
I think so, to be honest. I think we're slightly burnt out with not touring. Like, I think we've all quite got a good disposition for touring. We get on probably better than we ever have, and you know, we get things done. But it's like, you do it for so long, you know, we've been like 5 years a band, and a lot of it's kind of pointless. You know, a lot of shows you play are sort of pointless. And there's I think when you get a little bit older, there's a case where you just try and like
it's
preserve your sanity a little bit by like picking your fights, as it were. Yeah. We've got like some shows over the next 2 weeks, and then I'm sure we'll do more. But I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
Playing it by ear, I guess. Yeah, I think it's just, as I said, like we've done so many UK tours now, and there's, as you said, like picking your battles. Like there's certain towns you go back to again and again, and it just like never seems to.
Yeah.
Certain places we play around the country which are amazing every time, and they're great, and we'll go back there. And then there's certain places where you just keep going back, thinking, yeah, we're like building up fan base, and it just never seems to take. So. Yeah, as I said, it's just like now. It's just like, okay, fuck it. Let's just go somewhere else. Or like,
yeah, some guy on Twitter today was like, "Love the new album. Come back to Glasgow." And I'm like, no.
Played in Glasgow so many times to so few people.
I think like, we just have bad luck. But it's like,
you can only do it so many times, you know, exactly. Before you kind of think, oh, you know.
Yeah.
Especially when, like you say, you get places where you go to. Where it's, you know, we're amazing, you know, the venues are amazing, and you get like a really good vibe. They're the ones you're going to think, oh, well, you know, we're doing 10 dates, we'll go to,
And also, like, last year we toured in Europe quite a lot as well, and then once you've been to Europe and spent enough time touring there, it makes you never want to tour the UK ever again, pretty much, and just totally dismiss it in a way, and just focus on Europe, which is, again, something we'd like to do, I think.
Touring in Europe, and I think you'll speak to any band and they'll say it's great, and it spoils you, because just in general it's not that much fun touring in the UK, just because you just don't get treated as well, you know, the fees aren't as good. I don't think live music in the UK has the currency it does in Europe. I think people take it for granted.
Like how you're treated as like a touring musician kind of thing over there. It's like they appreciate that you've been sat in a van for 8 hours a day driving to get there, and they appreciate that that's your job, and to get there it's nice to be looked after and to be given some nice food and like a place to stay and just
appreciate
to be generally hospitable to you. Where in the UK that's not really that frame of mind a lot of places. There's a lot of great places that do have that as well, though, which I should have been. Not everywhere's like that. There's a lot of
amazing
places.
There are some amazing places and some really amazing promoters, but, you know,
there's
a few things that...
Yeah, it does. There are definitely some things that could be changed. Thank you very, very much for chatting. One final question, because it's just something that me and my mates were talking about on the train. Now, you probably heard about this U2 thing with Apple giving away their album for free, and it's been done by other bands before.
The
Radiohead did it, although Tom York's come out and said he's kind of regretted doing it now, but there's an argument that says that it kind of devalues the album when you give it away for free. Then there's the other argument of, well, yeah, but there's so many thousands of people who might not have heard it. Do you think that it devalues it when you do something like this as a kind of stunt as such?
I don't think you can devalue something that is as vacuous as a U2 album. It's like, I mean, the whole thing kind of stinks, and it's, you know, a band like that is so out of touch and behind the times, and. You know, they've just got so far away from where they started. Or what? I mean, I don't think they've ever been good, but you know, if you're a band that big and you don't bear in mind the fact that, you know, most people are making music or whatever, like slogging their guts out to even get an album made and then to sell them, and you know, to struggle on, and to just like give something away like that kind of stinks, I think.
It's like, it doesn't devalue their album, it just devalues everyone else's efforts and music in a way, kind of thing. It just puts it, I think, like very much with U2, in the way it's so big and tied in with Apple as well, it puts the idea into like the general population's minds and consensus that music again should be free and you don't need to pay for it. Like,
exactly,
which is
and
totally backwards.
That's quite bad enough consensus already amongst a lot of people, you know, that, oh, well, I can go online and download it in five minutes
yeah.
and not pay for it, you know. And yeah, like things like that definitely don't help. Yeah.
And what is really weird is the fact that it can just turn up in your iTunes.
Well, that's it. Yeah, you don't even. It's automatically
downloaded
to your phone and your iTunes. Yeah, you've got no choice.
Yeah.
It's there. Yeah, which is even more of a kind of.
But the other thing is, it's kind of an empty gesture anyway. It's a marketing ploy for Apple and U2 to say, oh, we've given you this album. I mean, you could, if you subscribe to Spotify or whatever, you could listen to it for free, basically for free anyway.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's no doubt that before they release that album, it will be streamed somewhere.
So
it's just kind of like a marketing thing. But I think Conan's right in that it's a gesture that like, once again, kind of rams home that point that people think now that music should be free.
Yeah, and it's hard enough to get people away from that mindset.
Saying that, though, I mean, there is a lot of people who, you know, I think there's a backlash against that kind of attitude as well nowadays. I think there's a lot of people who take pride in supporting bands.
Yeah.
Which obviously should be encouraged.
Yeah.
But how great would it be for a company like Apple to, you know, be acting as patrons for like some new bands and doing that with their, you know, with their albums?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
and whoever, I don't know, but
they could even do like they do this thing, I think, or one of the phone companies where they give away, or that you can download a film or something like that. Why not once every 2 weeks or every week they recommend a band, they give you a couple of tracks, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Would be a lot better.
I guess it's kind of like, in a way, how Trade does that. Rough Trade, you like a track of the week and an album of the week thing, where you subscribe to it and you get sent, what, 8 or 10 tracks a month or something. So in a similar way, I guess with phone companies or whatever, you're kind of paying a subscription anyway to use their product and use their...
Yeah.
So it could work like that in some way, I don't know. And then they're bad get cut from the phone companies.
Right, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Really look forward to the gig and good luck for the album and the tour.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Very much.